And, you know, if that's the way the guy is, and it's not a put on because it's a TV show and who knows, but, you know, there are people who are socially awkward and get a little nervous, and, you know, and I feel for them because that's tough to deal with anxieties and things. But
douche nozzle.
Yeah, just exactly. That and just kind of an a-hole and completely unaware. Mm-hmm.
17 intelligence, 7 wisdom.
Welcome to Nerd Burger, episode 47. I'm Mike.
I'm Craig.
And I'm Dave.
And here we are.
smart guy. Fine, no theme song for you.
Aw.
No theme for you.
Oh.
How's it going, Craig and Dave?
I could sing my theme song for it if you guys like.
Go for it.
Go.
I am the modern man who hides behind a mask that no one else can see. My true identity. I'm Kilroy. Kilroy. You'll need to level up that and post edit. But did you ever notice that he says modern and not modern?
Yes.
No.
I've noticed that.
It actually makes it tricky for me in conversation sometimes because I'll be talking seriously and so I'm like, yeah, and this is a modern operating system. Oh my goodness.
Just a quick note. That was terrible.
Oh, absolutely.
But kudos for having the cojones to do it and putting it on the internet forever.
Yeah. Well,
when you have my voice, you just learn to not have shame.
We're not even drinking.
Okay, I'm just going to close up the Mr. Roboto music clip. That's gone. We're not going to bother with that because nothing can top Dave's version. Now we've got it recorded, of course. We can use that in future episodes.
I lack foresight.
As your intro.
Would you like a ringtone?
Yes, absolutely.
I'll be sitting at work. Dave will call me.
What the hell?
It'll be as bad as Junior at work years ago.
Oh, no. Oh.
A little redheaded guy that was all, we called him Junior because he was just so, just so excited.
Like, also, he looked like he was,
real, 16. He looked very young and he was always very excited to be in architecture. And he had
working in a real job.
He had a ringtone on his phone, which was Peter Griffin laughing.
In a loop.
Yeah, and you know what that sounds like, right?
I actually do not.
Oh, jeez.
That would be hideous.
Yeah.
And he never silenced his phone.
We'd have conference calls and
meetings.
Lunch and learns and meetings and things, and we'd all of a sudden hear a sheep bleeding muffled in his pocket. And what a... He was a guy. He was something.
He was a guy.
he was a guy I worked with.
There's an epitaph. Right,
a lot
there.
Of stories. we talked about the possibility, because we mentioned it once before, and we talked about the possibility of maybe dedicating more time to Junior. Mm-hmm. But I think we should dole it out once every 6 months.
Sure.
It'll be an ongoing, in 3 years, you'll feel like you knew Junior just as well as we did.
Sounds good. And I also have an idea for a new buzzer sound the next time we do a game show.
Okay, what's that?
His ringtone, obviously.
Oh, yeah, well, next time we'll get everybody here with their electronic device to use for their buzzer. They'll have to set it up however they need to set it up for themselves, and we'll just do really annoying sounds and we'll lose all of our listeners.
Mm-hmm. I love this idea.
Well, it'll be the Jim Carrey. Want to hear the most annoying sound in the world?
Yeah.
Or whatever it is he does.
Yeah.
You know, I've changed my buzzer sound idea already. I want Mike's impersonation of Peter Griffin.
So what's been going on with you, Dave? Anything interesting? You've just been rolling along.
You know, I've been rolling along. I always consider my life a lot less interesting. You know, they have that saying that, you know, everybody thinks they're the star of their own movie. I'm actually that guy in the background who's eating pasta, who when he talks, you don't hear anything because the two main characters are actually talking in front. And to be honest with you, I'm being a little egotistical saying that because more than likely I'm actually the guy in a disaster movie when you hear this, 10,000 died in a tornado today, and I'm one of those 10,000. I'm just the statistic. So in my mind, not that interesting that things are going on. But I did buy a new car a couple of days ago, so that's cool.
And what do we have there?
It is actually a very, I decided to go all baller, very sexy, ladies keep your tops on, Honda Civic.
Four-door, right?
Four-door Honda Civic. Nice. Silver, 2014. Hit the 100-mile mark on the way over here. So
wow.
Yeah.
Ding, 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 ding.
So you can't afford to go to Japan, eh, for a while?
Yeah.
You had to spend some money.
Yeah, I had to spend some money. I was actually
the old car finally crapped out.
Yeah, I might have talked about that in a past episode. You know, a couple years ago when I went, it was like, buy a new car, go to Japan. Mm. And then the year before that, it was the same wager. Someone rear-ended me the other day. Interesting
that'll
story.
Decide it for you. Yeah.
Here's a lesson on causality.
All right.
All right. So right about, beginning of the year, I'm driving to work, rocking out, listening to Roboto or whatever that I do.
Singing along.
Yeah,
because that's all he listens to.
You know, when you actually hear the music playing, you're convinced your voice is better than, you know, hearing myself sing without any of that backup accompaniment. Ooh, man, you know. Oh, anyway. So I'm driving along and a cop pulls me over. And he's like, you know, that stop sign, he didn't really put enough effort into that. And I'm like, yeah, you know.
And you were like, what stop sign?
Well, you know, I had a 2000 Civic and I was playing Mario Kart with it by the end because who cares with a car that's 14 years old, you know? So it's like, okay, you got me. And so then I'm like, you know, I don't want to get another ticket again right away. So I've been very careful for a couple of weeks, especially on the way to work, same route. I'm a block away from the stop sign where he pulls me over. There's a car coming, and normally I do a rolling stop there because then I could sneak in front of the car, Atlanta traffic, not be stuck for 5 minutes because you didn't take the opportunity when you could have. I'm like, nope, complete stop, don't want another ticket.
And the guy who is used to driving behind you every day, when you roll through that stop sign.
Yeah, absolutely. So it turns out that the Civic's trunk space can become a lot smaller very quickly.
Oh.
So now I have a new car.
Josh's roommate totaled her car, got hit.
Oh, no.
Mere days before, the weekend before Snowmageddon we had here a couple weeks ago. Yeah. And she went out and he helped her out and got her, drove her around, and they went out shopping. She got a new car within a matter of a day or two, and then
got
the, you know, 9-hour drive home, you know, from work to home. And, you know, so Josh's comment to me when talking about this was, on the upside, she has very quickly become intimately familiar with everything about her car. She really knows her new car really well now. Because she had to...
Especially the interior.
Yes.
Not just how it drives in inclement weather.
You know, I love this because I'm from Michigan, you're from Wisconsin, and this was, what, an inch of snow?
2.5.
Up here, it was 2.5. Down in Atlanta, it was like an inch.
Yep. Yeah, and it's just like... That's Tuesday in April in Michigan. What are you talking about?
Well, we've belabored it already.
So, yeah, that's true. Although, did you guys hear about Horidian Way?
But what?
No.
People never tell anyone on the internet where you live. I live on the corner of Horidian Way. So I'm down in Union City buying my car, and the news comes on, and this is national news on Horidian Way. I'm like, what? And apparently they had a montage of cars wiping out going down this. It's not a very steep hill, but it was icy enough. They're just spinning out, crashing into stop signs. I'm like, that's my house. The worst part was my old Civic, as I was driving to the dealer, I spun out going down Horizon. I'm just like, well, yeah, for a second I thought I saw my car in the montage kind of a thing. But there was some tragic news. A girl actually lost her leg. In that she was trying to help get a car unstuck and another car wiped out and smashed her in. She got airlifted out by helicopter and everything. Yeah. So don't go to my house during an inch of snow in Atlanta.
Apparently.
Or anywhere. Yeah. In fact, if it's forecasted, just stay the hell home. Including your kids, your precious cargo. Don't put them in the hands of the people in charge of the schools around here.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
All right. Moving on.
News time.
Do you have news?
Go.
Okay, because mine weren't open.
Top-notch production.
Okay. Okay. Remember we've talked about the Google Glass?
Google Glass.
That one. Google introduces prescription-friendly designer glass frames.
Finally.
Oh, I've heard about this, yeah.
Yeah, Google unveiled 4 new frames for glass today, dubbed the Titanium Collection.
Do they cost $2,000?
Wait. That are compatible with prescription lenses. The frames will come in several different colors and styles to suit most users' tastes. The actual glass hardware attaches to the side with a single screw. 2 different clip-on sunglasses will also be available. The new designs may not keep you from being thrown out of a movie theater and questioned by Homeland Security, but they might help you look like less of a technophile in public, which is precisely Google's goal with the new frames. All of the frames are available today through Google for $255. The sunglasses will run for $150. None of the frames include the glass system, which must be purchased separately at a cost of $1,500. So really, it's just a drop in the bucket if you're already getting the little camera.
Yeah.
Craig is not amused.
Good luck, Google.
We'll see.
Want more tech schadenfreude?
If you'd like.
Microsoft testing Windows 8.1 update that hides tile interface by default. Yes, Windows is going back to the traditional desktop. The Metro interface is going away. You can bring it back if you want, but when you boot up, you're not going to see.
I have a story about
the
this,
tiles
actually.
Anymore.
First off, my buddy Steve Ballmer, when I was in at Microsoft's campus a couple of years back, he said Metro is dead. It's not called Metro anymore.
They did away with that right away.
Yeah, they renamed it Windows something something. Nobody's ever going to remember it. Second thing is, I actually installed Windows 8.1. I got a new laptop. It came with 8. I'm like, man, I wish it had 7, whatever. But, you know, I'm trying to flow with it. Where's my start menu? Oh, okay, I figured it out. It's not really a start menu anymore. Then I see 8.1 brings a start menu back. I'm like, awesome. I install 8.1. And it turns out in the bottom left-hand corner, there's this icon that you can click now that causes something kind of start menu-y to pop up.
Well, if you right-click on it.
No, left-click.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's 8.1. In Windows 8, you right-click and it appears, and there's no
that's
icon.
Right,
that's the only difference.
Yeah.
That's the only difference between 8 and 8.1, and I was really disappointed because then a lot of my drivers broke for my laptop. I'm like, great, now I got to wait for the update. So anyway, then Microsoft rolls out this mandatory Windows 8.1 update, and it keeps telling me to do it, and I'm like, fine, whatever. Formatted my hard drive.
What?
Reloaded Windows with no warning. I'm very annoyed.
Wow.
Yeah, so 8.1, not worth it.
I love you, Windows 7.
Okay.
Yeah, 7.
I'm stroking my start button right now.
It says, Microsoft has been paying close attention to telemetry data that shows the majority of Windows 8 users still use a keyboard and mouse in desktop applications. This same telemetry data was used to justify the removal of the start button in the first place shortly before the Windows 8 release and contributed to its eventual return in 8.1. So pretty much, Microsoft, your telemetry data sucks. Stop using it. Got something?
Jonathan Banks?
Yeah.
The actor, Jonathan Banks.
Oh, Mike from Breaking Bad.
Mike Ehrmantraut from Breaking Bad.
And now Professor something or other on Community.
Is officially coming back. Better Call Saul.
Yes!
Yeah.
That was an epic high five. I'm too
far
away.
Yeah, terrible.
Yeah, I reached right. Bump.
That was a King of the Nerds high five right there.
Yeah. Too bad we don't have a webcam.
No, it's good that you don't have a webcam.
Yeah, if you watch Breaking Bad, you know what happens to him. But Better Call Saul is a prequel, so here, you know, don't have to worry about any other stuff.
That's right.
It'll be young Mike Ehrmantraut when he's slightly less jaded.
Yeah.
With life. which is awesome. That's great. I mean, now we're just waiting for the guy who plays Huel and the guy who plays Kubi, Bill Burr. They got to get their call. Because, I mean, keep in mind, Kubi and Huel are Saul's number one guys.
Yeah.
So they should make appearances.
Absolutely.
If Saul had his number one guys for any length of time, maybe we'll get to see them before they become the number one guys. Mm. We'll find out how, because that duo was fun.
Any word on how far in the past the show is supposed to be set?
I don't know. There's been all sorts of rumors floating around, like it's going to be sequel and prequel. Like every so often, it'll bounce to the
flash
future.
Forward.
It'll okay. Flash forward. And
show him in
past.
The
past.
Kind of Lost style.
Yeah, and there's
show
people.
Him in the Cinnabon in Omaha.
Yeah, and they'll have, there's people have their wish lists of they want like the last scene of the last episode of Better Call Saul to be, you know, him meeting Walter White or mentioning that he has a meeting with some math teacher, you know, or a science, you know, chemistry teacher or whatever. But who knows what they're, you know, who knows how they're going to actually do that, but you know, just some sort of a nod that connects the two series. Mm-hmm. You know, technically, I mean, you know, with the exception of Walter White, a lot of the characters from Breaking Bad could be in Better Call Saul, even if it's just for like one episode cameos. You could see Jesse Pinkman show up again.
Oh, well, yeah. Jesse even comments on how, you know, you get a criminal lawyer at the beginning. So, you know, they easily could have interacted before.
So I just have to make sure they do that stuff early enough before age starts to catch up with Aaron Paul. Because he's a young guy now, and he needs to still look young.
Whereas the older Bob Odenkirk gets, the more he's going to look like Saul.
Well, I mean, Jesse, Aaron Paul, when they did the flashback in the final, what was it, third to last episode of Ozymandias, and they do the flashback to their first cook.
Mm-hmm.
Jesse doesn't look like Jesse because Aaron Paul has put on weight. He's gotten bigger. Fatter. Yeah, he wasn't the little skinny guy anymore. So.
His hairline went back a little bit. Mm-hmm. Sorry, man, if you're listening, but it's just true.
So there you go.
He started out with a 5 head on that show. He ended with like a 7 head.
Jonathan Banks is back on board. I love that actor. He's cool.
Oh, he's great.
He's super bad.
He was my favorite character on Breaking Bad.
He's up there, yeah, for me.
What was your favorite then, Craig?
Gus.
Gus was good, yeah.
For me, it's Marie. Anyone that loves purple, that kind of dedication.
I love it when Dave brings the funny.
It's not often, so yeah.
Do you have any other news over there?
Oh, do you have any Star Wars news?
No, I don't. Well, I mean, I think I know of some things, but I don't have anything prepped.
I do.
Okay.
Kind of. One planet, two stars. New research shows how circumbinary planets form. Circumbinary.
Okay.
Luke Skywalker's home planet, Tatooine, would have formed far from its current location in the Star Wars universe. A new University of Bristol study into its real-world counterparts, observed by the Kepler Space Telescope, suggests. Like the fictional Star Wars planet, Kepler-34ABB is a circumbinary planet, so-called because its orbit encompasses two stars. There are few environments more extreme than a binary star system in which planet formation can occur. Powerful gravitational perturbations from the two stars on the rocky building blocks of planets lead to destructive collisions that grind down the material. So how can the presence of such planets be explained?
Magic. The Force. The Force. Right?
Nice save. basically, the researchers found that the majority of the planets must have formed much further away from the central binary stars and then slowly migrated to their current location.
So they couldn't have formed close.
No, but they can exist.
Okay. So look at that.
George Lucas, you accidentally got something right.
Well, it was just writing a story.
Yeah, I mean, Star Wars is not really science fiction anyway, if you think about it. They almost never have any kind of... They don't bother with the, oh, I'm going to go for an explanation. It's just sort of... It's a kind of a fantasy set in space.
It's space fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, his pitch was...
The Force is just magic.
Yeah, wizards in space.
Yeah.
And now on to the funny.
All right.
We almost lost our lives. Woman possessed by demons in portal to Hell House that terrified even the police chief reveals new details of her family's terrifying ordeal. Did you hear about this?
No, but I'm really intrigued.
A woman whose horrific experience living in an Indiana home that she and even...
Okay. There we go. Ba-da-da-da-da. Indiana. Just making an Indiana joke. Okay, there's more. So it's even worse than living in Indiana.
She's spoken out on her paranormal trauma and what it was like to be a family possessed. Latoya Amons said she had seen her own daughter levitate off a bed, her son walk up a wall so effortlessly that even a psychiatrist was at a loss, and was herself the victim of demonic possession in what appears to be an average home in the Gary, Indiana community near where Michael Jackson grew up. Obviously something in the water there. Me and
LSD.
I'm
baffled here as you're reading this story to us. If I had children that could fly and walk on walls like Spider-Man, I'd be the proudest parent ever.
You'd be establishing a foundation, setting up a home, a base of operations.
Absolutely.
Doing whatever spider you could, getting investors to have superheroes.
Whatever a spider kid does.
Like spider pig. Yeah, but yeah.
She says, this was obviously demons, not just random spirits. There is a difference.
Oh, I know.
I was infested with demons. I know that for a fact, she said. I spoke to a good friend of mine. He was clairvoyant. He's in New York. He explained to me that what was going on in the house. And how much did he charge you to explain that over the phone? Anyway, it's just pretty silly.
Can you cite your source, please?
The Daily Mail.
Oh, okay. There we go.
Wow.
They've got a picture here. A picture the police took of the front of the house, and they've circled what looks like, if you squint kind of and unfocus your eyes, it looks like somebody with a sheet over their head and two giant eye holes and a mouth hole cut out peering out the window. We'll put that on the website.
Oh. Do you want some more funny?
Sure.
Okay. I'm going to pose the question to you and let each of you answer. And then we're going to jump into this. There's more to it than that.
I need my buzzer back.
What's the best dinosaur?
Stegosaurus.
Okay.
That is a tough question. Yeah, I went back and forth on this as a kid a lot. Stegosaurus was definitely up there. Ankylosaurus, Brontosaurus, T-Rex. They're all classics, but I think Ankylosaurus is always my favorite.
Okay. There's a comedian, Dan Telfer, who does... we're not going to play the whole thing here. It's nearly 6 minutes long. Of him just asking the audience, what's the best dinosaur? And he has his responses to all of their suggestions and eventually does get to what the actual best dinosaur is.
So he shoots down everyone's suggestion.
It's great. Here's part one.
Do you guys feel like you have a good grasp of what you think the best dinosaur is? What do you think the best dinosaur is? T-Rex, I get it, buddy. But I want you to really, really thoroughly image map that dinosaur in your brain and imagine trying to open a fruit cup. And also, what about Gigantosaurus? Same genus, bigger forearms, less spork-like. Okay? So Gigantosaurus, but also, what about Spinosaurus, the biggest carnivore ever to walk the planet from head to toe, tallest badass ever to be on the planet Earth. But still, he had a giant decorative sail on his back. You can already maul anything on Earth. Why the fuck do you have this big flippity floppity directed of sail on your back? How small is your dick? Do you drive a Porsche? Whatever, midlife crisis. What else? What else do you think is the best dinosaur?
Plesiosaurus.
Marine reptile, not a real dinosaur. What else? Stegosaurus? I get it, man. It's a peaceful herbivore. It's got bony plates on its back, a spiked tail. Very unique. But fossil records show it is the dumbest thing ever to walk around. Its brain is the size of a walnut. It was so f***ing stupid. It had a second brain in its stomach to control its tail. It had an ass brain. You can't feel bad. It's not an obstacle like that. What else?
Okay, we're going to jump forward.
I don't know how you could do better than ass brain.
What else? What? Brontosaurus. Fake dinosaur. Someone hoodwinked us in the late 1800s, took the skull from a stegosaurus, put it on an apatosaurus. And for over 100 years, we thought there was a creature called a brontosaurus, but then, you know, a series of scientists figured it out. They sued the U.S. Postal Service to get them to redact all of the U.S. postal stamps with a brontosaurus on them. Our dream of one day cloning a brontosaurus, sitting down with Fred Flintstone having a brontosaurus burger, has been dashed. So, while you have my sympathies, it'll never happen. Next dinosaur. Velociraptor is the Tanya Harding of the dinosaur. Mid-sized predator who had hook talons on his feet. He could drop kick the head off an apatosaurus. He was an awesome dinosaur called Deinonychus. Okay, he was in all the color forms, all the cartoons. I had an action figure. But then Steven Spielberg literally sat down Michael Crichton about that book being translated into a movie. That fucking Jurassic Park piece of garbage. Alright, and he said to Michael Crichton, alright, look, you have this thing in the book called a Velociraptor, but they're too small. We'll make it look exactly like its cousin, the Deinonychus. He's already popular, but we'll give it the more aerodynamic-sounding Velociraptor name. Velociraptor was this f***ing big, okay? He was the size of a goose, okay? He was a piece of garbage scavenger. Nothing! If you encountered a Velociraptor in the wild, here's what would happen. Oh, hey, f***er. Scary dinosaur encounter. What else?
And it goes from there.
Does he actually reveal what the best dinosaur is?
Yes, he does.
Well, you need to show this to us.
Oh, can I try to find that? Okay, the best dinosaur.
The best dinosaur, someone else has shouted out, is Ankylosaurus.
Yes!
Because it's the fused lizard, you guys. So it means in Latin. It's invincible, just solid armor. 12 predators can attack it at once. Kneel down and take a nap. Dream of cupcakes. Peaceful lagoon. They could issue it any customer service demand. Condescend to it. No one could steal its lunch money from the dumpster and call it a faggy fag fag fag.
Thank you. And he drops the mic and walks off the stage. I get the feeling he wasn't talking about the dinosaur anymore there at the end.
No,
unfortunately.
So there's other stuff in there. You know what the best is now, according to the guy, but there's other.
You'll put a link for that in the show notes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. It's great. They go through like all the dinosaurs I could think of, they touch on. I mean, it's a 6-minute bit, or maybe 5. So there's your dinosaur fun for Nerdburger today. When I started listening to that, I thought Ankylosaurus as well. Mm. I really liked that one.
I've never even heard of that one.
Little what? Tiny tough guy. Yeah, it's a little short, low to the ground, 12-foot long.
It's
got a big club tail.
That one. Oh,
and it's got it's like a turtle shell on the back and all spiky down the sides.
Yeah, that one's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's like untouchable. Because it already looks like it's been run over by something. Mm. It's so low. But it was great that day. I happened to have it cued to Stegosaurus when you said that. And the best paid off for Dave. Well
Very
done.
Good.
What else?
Shall we talk King of the Nerds?
We can. Dave, do you watch King of the Nerds?
I do not.
On TBS? Okay, so you can ask us questions about... You know, questions like, why the hell are you watching this?
Fair enough.
I was asking myself that question.
5 minutes into the first episode?
What kind of format is this show? Is it like a sitcom or reality?
It's a reality competition show.
Oh, my.
Yeah, yeah. The first season was 8 episodes, I imagine.
This
the
one
second
is supposed to be 8, be only about thank
Oh, so it's
God.
By the BBC then?
No, it's
by the TBS.
Oh, okay.
And it's they get a bunch of nerds who are really outgoing and... You know, there's only a few of them that are really socially awkward.
Well, they start with 11 this time. I don't know what they did.
Like that.
I didn't watch the first season. You did.
The first season was roughly the same as what's been going on now. And they put them all in a house and they divide them into two teams and they have to compete. In the first half of the show, the two teams compete against each other in the, what are they called?
Nerd-off?
Is that the Nerd-off? The two teams compete against each other.
Is there a prize or something at the end?
Yeah, I mean, the winner gets like $100,000 or something.
No. They do. They have some kind of main competition.
Right.
And then
it's a team thing.
And it's a team.
Team
thing.
On team.
And then,
whichever team wins gets to sit back and watch the other team suffer because then on the other team,
they have to pick one person to send
from their own team
to send to the nerd off. And then the team that won gets to pick a second person from the team that lost. To go to the nerd off.
And those two people duke it out in some sort of nerdy thing, and whoever loses goes home.
Mm. So there's all kinds of strategy about who do you want off that team?
Yeah.
Then that's the
does the winning team want to get rid of on the losing team that'll make that team weaker?
Mm. Oh, so the teams are consistent week to week.
Yes.
Okay.
And then on the losing team, they're, you know, basically deciding who on our team sucks and needs to go.
Yeah, who do we want out of here?
Who's weakening us?
So it seemed like the winner of the show would be the last person picked to join one of these teams, because then of all the people who would never get picked, they were the last, and then truly the king of the
Well, they kind of make a thing out of that in the beginning.
Yeah.
Because they start with 11, so there's an odd number, and they have people, I don't know what
they randomly selected.
They randomly
two
selected captains, and then
and then two captains pick their teams.
Oh, they actually have a team picking thing then.
Yeah, so you get down to the last person who's being picked last.
And what was funny is the last person who was picked was the least nerdiest looking of them all. It was the hot blonde girl.
Yeah.
Who was a Japanophile.
Right. Hmm. And they made a twist on it where they got down to the last person. They said, you know, man, it sucks being the last person picked for something, but we're going to give you the power. You get to choose right now.
Because being picked last is the ultimate in nerdiness.
It's the nerdiest thing. So you choose right now one person who's going home. Right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And she picked someone.
And then
and
they said,
took
you know
their
what?
Place.
Come to think of it, this is the nerdiest thing that could happen. Yeah. So now you have all the power.
And then she got to pick what team she wanted to be on.
Oh, awesome.
So nobody actually went home in the first 10 minutes.
But ultimately, that blonde
girl
did go home.
She ended up being the one who went home anyway. She lost the nerd off.
But I was making notes, and
I'd like to correct myself. A while back, I said David Carradine is the co-host. No, David Carradine is an older gentleman.
Who has been
on Dexter and everything. This is Robert Carradine.
Oh, Bobby.
Bobby.
Yeah.
This is Lewis from the Revenge of the Nerds movies.
And okay, so you're not talking about Kung Fu, the legend.
Booger
continues,
is the host.
Right, not David Carradine Kung Fu, Robert Carradine Lewis.
Gotcha.
He's the co-host. And again, he's about as animated this year as he was last year.
He's kind of boring. That's where I thought you were going with that he's not really a co-host, because he just stands there.
He doesn't do much. Curtis Armstrong is fun as hell. Yeah. He's playing
he's
it
into
up.
It.
He's loud and making a show out of it.
I was trying to keep track of all these people. Because you know when you start out,
there's a lot of people.
There's a lot of people to keep track of. So I'm taking my notes, and because I knew I needed to talk about it. Normally, I wouldn't even care.
Hey, Dave, he's taking notes on a TV show. That's really nerdy.
Yeah, that's very nerdy indeed.
So what got me and made me start doing this was what they listed underneath the person's name as their occupation. Because some people actually have real occupations, and other people don't.
Have descriptors.
But you're made to think that that's their occupation. And right. In one case, it actually is. The guy who is the Pokemon master.
Yeah.
Apparently, he makes his living making YouTube videos about Pokemon.
And there are professional tournaments for these collectible card games where people can make, like, become rich kind of a thing, you know. Yeah.
But this guy, that guy was super nerdy.
Yeah.
And he got kicked off.
He has an awkwardness to him, too. Yeah.
Well, he's a giant.
Yeah.
So here...
He's tall and gangly, and
so there's Brian, who is self-described as a hobbit. He's the guy that he's so hairy that his hair and his beard look like a wig and a fake beard.
They do. They look. It doesn't look natural.
That's interesting.
Yeah. He's a historian. And there's Kayla, who I put has glasses and is a rocket scientist. Katie, who has purple hair and is a roboticist and into puppets.
And she's the emotional one for this episode. She got all crybaby in the second episode.
She ran into the women's room and
locked herself in one of the stalls.
Because I think it was Kayla.
Yeah.
Said something that upset
her. What's funny is it was the pink haired girl last season.
Was it?
Yeah. The girl who colors her hair a weird color was the emotional one.
Huh.
In both seasons.
Interesting.
Then there's
who got all upset at somebody over something ridiculous.
Then there's Xander, who is like, sweet, I'm a nerd. My parents named me Alexander, so I get to call myself Xander. And this is what I wrote. And I kept adding to this as it went on. Earring, bow tie, gay? Yes, gamer. And as self-described, G-A-Y-M-E-R, gamer. LARPer, Japanophile.
And fiercely proud of it.
He's actually...
He was discussing that within minutes of meeting all these people.
Fiercely proud of which one?
Of being a gay mer.
Mer.
I mean, it's very much part of his identity, apparently. Or they just edited it that way, for all I know.
I think there's a meetup in Atlanta that has that.
Yeah, I mean,
well.
it's a thing. That's fine. But, I mean, they just, like, it's one of those things where they got to get the point across about each of the characters. Mm-hmm. And, you have limited time, so.
Yeah.
You hit on stuff quickly.
There's Kelsey, who is the blonde Japanophile. Jack, Asian. Bioengineer, and he is super goofy. He's so goofy.
He's kind of funny.
Yeah. Nicole is the redhead inorganic chemist who is the schemer trying to make an alliance.
She likes to think she is.
Yeah. Josh is the giant Pokemon master. Chris is the black guy, mechanical engineer, who thinks he can fix a starship.
Now, can you back that statement up with a few comments, please?
What do you mean?
You said he thinks he can fix a starship. What did he say to give you that impression?
He thought he could fix a starship.
And I'm like, which got me thinking there must be two different kinds of mechanical engineer, because the kind of mechanical engineer that you and I work with could not fix a starship.
You know, could fix the air conditioning on a starship.
Yeah, if maybe.
You know what it probably is his title, the thing that goes with engineer, is something that everybody in the world would look at and go, I don't know what that means. So they used the word mechanical and then had him describe, I can fix a starship.
I don't think he designs HVAC systems.
No.
There's Mary Kate. I said it's the big girl. Aerospace student. Costumer and a brony.
Yeah, we got a brony on the show. We'll get to that.
Okay.
And finally, and God, I hope he gets kicked off soon.
No, I hope he wins. He's got to be in every episode.
Zach.
Oh, Zach.
I just wrote dork. He's a self-described fantasy writer.
Oh, the great thing about
he's
Zach.
A World of Warcraft top 25, and then I put on meth. This guy
and he's like
just the a-hole.
Yeah, it's great. The a-hole in the first season only made it till about the third or fourth episode. I hope this guy hangs around longer, because when they went to his team lost the team challenge,
the volcano science fair,
and it ended up being him being voted by his team unanimously
because they wanted him gone.
All right,
including the girl that he thought he had an alliance with,
Nicole.
She flipped on him, and he got voted unanimously.
Well, he betrayed her.
Yeah,
she was trying to hide the fact that she was a chemist, and he volunteered her as the chemist because they needed somebody that knew chemistry. For
right,
this.
They were doing a volcano, like a science fair volcano
the
thing.
Stupid, like paper mache volcano, and then you mix the stuff inside, and
that's
erupts.
Vinegar and baking soda.
Well, they did it with more than that. It was like real chemicals.
Gotcha. And apparently, they were supposed to have a lava explosion that was supposed to be set off by the One Ring, because they built Mordor as their volcano.
Of course they did.
And
they goofed it up, so they had the lava.
The Asian Jack guy was dropped the ring, and so the lava didn't go off.
Anyway,
and but that's why they lost.
It gets down to Zach is voted out by his team, and what's his name?
The
tall guy.
The winning team voted.
What's his name?
Josh.
The giant
Pokemon master.
And
because they felt that he was the least scientific. And they figured
they had their strategy.
Yeah,
right?
They had a strategy for getting rid of him.
And so, in much the same way that if you've ever watched or even heard about Survivor or any of the shows like this where there's an elimination.
I really haven't, sorry.
Jeff Probst, who's the host on Survivor, has gone on the record on many occasions saying, when you're in that final tribal council and somebody says, can I just say something, Jeff? What's your response to that? And he says, oh, I always let them talk. Always let the people talk. Never tell them no. And that's exactly what happened in here. Is like they just let him talk, and he Zach rips off with like some comment about how he did everything, or he was like the mastermind behind everything.
And he has 146 IQ and blah blah blah.
And the guy he's going to be going up against calls him out on it, and then Zach just goes and goes on this little diatribe, and basically, I mean. It got really uncomfortable, and there was cuts to the hosts and to the other team members, and people are just sitting there with their heads buried in their hands, and they're like, oh, my God.
At one point, one of the people on the other team said, I'm so glad I'm on this team.
Oh, yeah. See, that's the moment. I can't watch a cringe show for, you know, seasons and seasons, but I'll watch 8 episodes of that guy putting his foot in his mouth for a minute an episode every single.
I can't stand him.
So you've got me curious though. You said there's these nerd offs. So they have the volcano erupting Mordor thing.
That was the science.
That was the
fair.
Team on team thing.
Okay, so what are the like the final one on one battles like?
Well, the first one was Nerditch.
Yeah,
they had them suspended on wires,
and they rode a broom and had to throw potions into cauldrons.
That actually sounds kind of awesome.
And they got a ride.
Was this a dexterity physical challenge?
Well, they answered Harry Potter questions in order to get their rides on the broom.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And for every Harry Potter question you got a ride on the broom, and there were different cauldrons of different sizes, and they were worth different.
So it was a duathlon.
Yes.
The second episode was the alien autopsy.
That was cool. I like that.
Yeah. So what they had to do was they had 3 hours to memorize. They had a book with pictures of all of the alien organs.
They just these weird
and they were
goofy
they
shapes
were
and things.
Heart, kidney, stomach or whatever, but they didn't look anything like a human organ. And so they had to memorize what they looked like, and then they also had to memorize actual human anatomy because they were going to
they had to know what those organs do.
They were going to describe the organ functions that they were then supposed to look for. So they were going to describe what the heart does, and they had to know that's the heart, I got to find the alien heart.
Gotcha.
And Zach, the a-hole, ended up winning.
Handily.
Yeah. And what I thought was very amazing and telling and speaks to the entire point of these reality competition shows was Xander being interviewed in the confessional.
Right.
You know, after the fact, said he really wanted Josh to win because he liked Josh. But, quote, we need Zach on the other team to create drama. I can't believe they let him say that, because that's totally what it's all about.
Oh, absolutely.
And what was great was the losing team all helped Josh prepare.
They wanted.
And Xander from the winning team went over to help Zach prepare.
Yeah, like Zach went to prepare and nobody on his team would help him.
Mm-hmm.
And typically on these shows, they'll find each person, because there's always like something you got to prep for.
Yeah.
A lot of times, and each person will find somebody, and they're all, you know, they're all playing the game and being friendly and good and cool with each other. So, like, you're looking to play chess against somebody, you go find the person in the house that knows how to play chess really well. And so, like, the two best chess players end up helping the two people that are going to compete.
Gotcha.
But this time, the whole team was like, nope, the whole team helped the other guy.
That's awesome.
And now they're stuck with Zach again.
Yeah.
That's good game design, having to be able to flip like that. You know, keeps it interesting.
Oh.
So I was very, very
so ridiculous.
Annoyed by the show up until the second half of this episode. And then it actually got interesting.
So, well, it's
and
one
the
of
fact
those
that I know there's
things,
only six left.
Yeah,
I think I can tough through it.
The skit stuff that they do whenever there's like whenever they try they have to do something that's skit kind of oriented that right. gets a little to watch the two volcano presentations where they're you know they're doing it as a, it's not just making the volcano erupt they've got like a little story wrapped around it
there's okay.
a little narrative and everybody talks and. Because they have to impress their celebrity judges. They have guest judges there.
Oh, yeah, they had are they Bill Nye, the science guy, Mayim Bialik, and some 19-year-old that
some
won
incredible
some
genius kid.
Genius science competition. Well, anyway, speaking of the 19-year-old kid, at one point, Zach is criticizing him, saying in the confessional, saying, a 19-year-old kid is not a developed brain. And then you hear the guy off camera ask him how old he is, and Zach says, 21.
Well, Zach, the great thing about Zach is he just volunteers stuff that just, like, just shut the hell up. You said, like, he volunteered his IQ to people immediately as, like, some sort of justification. Mm-hmm. He pointed out that, you know, I'm going to have a really easy time with this, this alien autopsy thing because I have a photographic memory. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, only a-holes do that, right?
Yeah.
Just volunteer up their super credentials to make themselves look.
He's not self-aware at all.
No, not at all. He has no idea that people think he's really off. That other people think he is really off-putting. Mm-hmm.
The question I have is: did you say Blossom is a guest judge?
Yeah,
she has a PhD in neuroscience.
I did not know that.
Although at one point, I think it was
Nerd Burger.
It was Jack referred to her as Mayim Bialik, Amy Farrah Fowler.
Yeah, he clearly had a nerd crush.
Yeah.
Yeah, she. Well, the funny bit from, well, I don't know if you call it that funny or anything, but the kind of little jokey bit from Big Bang Theory. Mm-hmm. There's an episode way back in the first or second season when people talk, the guys are talking about how they want to hang around with some geeky girls. Mm-hmm. And at one point in that episode, somebody mentions Mayim Bialik from Blossom has a PhD in neuroscience. And somebody else mentions the girl from The Wonder Years.
Oh, yeah, she's the math girl.
Winnie Cooper, yeah.
Is a math nerd. And they've both been on the show since.
Mm-hmm.
One as a regular and one as a episode guest star.
Yeah, the Winnie Cooper, I never know how to pronounce her name, but she does like lectures to help empower girls with math and has a book about that.
Yeah, she does all videos and everything. I've seen them. It's really good. Yeah. We should look that up and put it on for... Yeah, she's focused very much on making math and science. Danica McKellar, making it friendly for young girls because of the bias in a lot of schools where girls don't do science. She's like telling them, "Hey, no, girls can do science. Science is awesome." So good for her. Cool. Yeah, I want Zach around forever.
I guess
I want him to be in all the way to the end and then lose. That's what I want.
Well, that would be ideal. Yeah,
I want him to reveal two more, astounding factoids about himself in every episode. Once in the first half hour, once in the second half hour, so that every half hour I have confirmation. Yep, this guy's a douche nozzle.
It's just so difficult to watch somebody who is supposedly that smart be so stupid.
But it's two different kinds of
I know.
Intelligence. He's intelligent. He's not street smart. He's not socially savvy. He has no clue that everybody looks at him and goes, wow, I'm just kind of uncomfortable. He's always a little nervous. And, you know, if that's the way the guy is, and it's not a put on because it's a TV show and who knows, but, you know, there are people who are socially awkward and get a little nervous. And, you know, and I feel for them because that's tough to deal with anxieties and things. But.
Douche nozzle.
Yeah, just exactly. That and just kind of an a-hole and. Completely unaware. Mm-hmm.
17 intelligence, 7 wisdom.
There you go.
in D&D terms.
So we'll come back to it here and there, but no, I don't think it.
No, not every episode or every week. No. It's just, it strikes me funny too, between the two seasons, is that in both cases, in each season, for whatever, and I don't think I have this type, but for whatever reason, the pink haired girl and the purple haired girl, mm-hmm. in the second season, I was kind of like, in both cases, I was like, oh, hey, look, you know, kind of cute little indie girl. She's got a lot, you know, she's spunky, she's feisty.
Right.
And both of them turned out to be what appears to be emotional, mm-hmm. problems. And I'm just like, yeah. Oh, okay, keep that in mind, Craig. Apparently those things go hand in hand in the nerd world.
You have an excellent sample size there, by the way.
Yeah, two.
Craig. But it's Oh man, I met this great chick. She's so awesome, man. She's got green hair. The one. Craig, calm down. What color hair does she have? No, it's normal. It's brown. You're good to go.
Turns out to be a serial killer.
Okay. You can't win. You just can't
win. All right, Dave.
Yeah, speaking of.
Let's go.
Where are we going?
Where do you think we're going?
I don't want to know. That look on your face has me concerned.
It starts with a B.
Is it bronies?
There we go.
Oh, bronies.
Okay. Ooh. Nerdburger us, Dave.
Nerdburger you.
What are bronies?
Okay. So,
well, first of all, I'd like to point out that I had no idea what these things were until like a year ago, or I don't even remember.
I learned about 2 weeks ago.
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
That's impressive. That is an impressive delay.
I had a much more pleasant year than you, apparently.
You did.
not knowing that this existed.
This contributed to 2013 being a bad year for me.
Okay.
So, bronies, for people who aren't in the know, and I want to preface this by saying I'm not among their tribe membership, bronyhood. I don't know what term they use.
Bronyhood. Now, wait. Brony, mm-hmm. is a portmanteau, is it not?
It Ooh. Is. It is.
$5 word?
Yes.
Do I get points for that?
Sure.
Yeah, that was last week's episode.
Oh,
weeks.
Yeah.
Anyway, so as some people may know, there is a cartoon out there for children, specifically little girls. The demographic's about 9 years old.
Called, it's supposed to be for little girls, but yeah.
We're getting there.
It's called My Little Pony.
I remember
Friendship
that,
is,
yeah.
Friendship is Magic.
Well, that's a reboot of you know, the original toy line / commercial planted as a TV show, and I have been told, I haven't actually watched any episodes, so you know, I'm good to judge here.
It's like cartoon ponies and rainbows and things like that
for 9-year-old girls, mm-hmm,
yeah.
And for the record, we're not judging really any. I mean, if you want to be into the thing you're into, that's cool, but this is a little odd to me, so I want to hear a little more.
Yeah, this is an interesting hobby, to say the least. But yeah, apparently the new show, The Friendship is Magic, mm-hmm. it has some decent writers for American cartoons. So apparently that's the only qualification to have, not like a small little subgroup, but a whole throng of adult men into this cartoon. And these men refer to each other as bronies, and they tend to be quite proud. I've met a few bronies in my time. Being a geek, you go to conventions. You see, sure. You see these, you know, people my age, 35 or whatever, in full pony costume, with like rainbows emblazoned on them and whatnot, and the tails and the hooves and
the whole.
Those are very out and
the
proud
whole bit
bronies.
And bridle.
Yeah,
as it were.
Yeah, exactly. They're very proud bronies. And apparently the number of hooves that they raise up does not signify anything about their riders.
Right, right.
But
see last week's episode.
Uh-huh.
However, so, you know, just the knowledge of this phenomenon was enough to just shock and horrify me a little bit. And, you know, as Craig says, there's no judging, but dang it, I'm human and it's a little hard to judge. So
little bit of judging.
Yeah, you know. So, you know, I look into this. I'm like, well, what's appealing about this? You know, kind of a thing.
And I'm wondering how you, okay, you like the cartoon that's designed for 9-year-old girls. Okay, whatever, you know, people's tastes and all that, what we watch on TV. But how do you go from that to dressing up like a My Little Pony as a 35-year-old man?
Well, and this is the question I had for some bronies that I've spoken with. And, you know, some of them are actually...
Serica? Is that you?
So in my inquiry, you know, I've talked with some bronies, and it's like, so what about the show appeals to you? You know, and to be honest with you, there are female bronies as well. I think they go by a different name. It might be female bronies, or, you know, I was alive in the 80s, so nostalgia. I'm not sure which, but perhaps Craig will know in a moment for us. But anyway, so I'm speaking with these bronies and I'm asking them, you know, what about this show is so appealing to you? Maybe there's, you know, something behind the covers here. And this is, and I kid you not, 5 different occasions, the universal first thing that comes out of their mouth.
Pegasister.
Impressive.
Well done, Google. Google. Now so, I can't even say it
without the glass part.
You know, if you had your prescription glass, you wouldn't have even had to. But anyway, yeah. so you know, I've asked 5 different bronies, you know, men my age, some of them in costume, some of them just wearing the t-shirts, some having tails without costumes. So you get the idea.
Yep.
What about this show, you know, is going to appeal to me as an adult male? And the very first thing they always say is the exact same thing.
Okay, hold on. Now, we're going to build a little suspense like they do on those reality shows. Mm-hmm. This is either going to be really cool or really, really disturbing. Place your bets. The setup makes me think that.
Okay, that's
it's going to be like, oh, this is going to be perfectly relatable and okay, good on you. Or it's going to be like, whoa.
I'm going with disturbing.
Okay, I'm kind of there with you just because I want it to go that way, but go ahead. All right. So the first thing they say is...
The answer may surprise you.
I would be pleasantly surprised if it was cool, though.
There is a character, not a recurring character. Well, recurring, but not a main character,
mm-hmm.
named Dr. Hooves.
Dr. Hooves.
A like pun on Dr.
Who. Dr.
Who,
well, obviously.
Does he have a tiny little stable that's much bigger on the inside?
I haven't watched it. Apparently, it has a scarf. However, this is their opening argument as to why they watch a show for 9-year-old girls.
Dr. Hooves.
So it's not disturbing. It's not face planting. That is not a reason to watch a show for 9-year-old girls.
The cynic in me...
It just begs more questions.
The cynic in me says that's the cover-up answer.
Yeah.
That's the answer I can give that's not going to creep somebody out.
Like, they all...
I hate to say it, but that's
the,
what that feels
the,
like to me.
They all decided in the brony meeting that this is what we're going to tell people.
It would explain the universal answer right there. It really does. And, you know, the cynic in you, there is a definite foundation for that. I can't say this is true for what I'm about to talk about. It's true for all bronies. But the internet does reveal a lot of things.
Yeah.
And I have not done this research myself because, as Craig commented on the outtake from last episode, you know, you don't want to be Googling things with NSA and whatnot like that. But so, you know, I let other people do the research and I read their blogs and articles on it. And I'm plenty entertained by that. But there is a whole the series of fandom expression can be quite disturbing. There are in this, I'll just open up with this one because everyone assumes it anyways. There are porn comics. I've seen some of the censored ones on these blogs where they blur out the bits, but you can see the dialogue. If you could see me shaking my head in terror right now, it's just
got to do a video cast.
Yeah, it is quite disturbing. You can't unsee things. There is a very popular video game for the PC and the Xboxes called Fallout. I don't know if you're familiar with this. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's set in a post-apocalyptic world. It has a tongue-in-cheek tone to it. There is a novel length, like War and Peace style novel length fan fiction that meshes Fallout with My Little Pony.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
If you can think of it, there's a community.
Yeah.
I'm not too familiar with My Little Pony lore, but I'm under the impression that Rainbows plays a big role in it, which doesn't surprise me as a show for 9-year-old girls. Just want to say, guys, 9-year-old girls, you are a boy. You are over 30. Stop watching. Anyways, wow, I didn't realize how passionate I was about my...
That's fine.
All right.
You can believe what you want to believe. That's fine.
All right. Anyways, so Rainbows apparently... They're featured like heavily in the mythos of this world. And so some of the fans have taken some of this and decided to extrapolate on it because some of that stuff is only apparently hinted on. And they have written whole epic poems about the tears of orphan ponies being ground up to create rainbows or some such thing. And it's apparently a reference to some throwaway lines in some episodes. And you just go, okay, this goes beyond, you know, just your standard, you want to have sex with a pony, which, remind you, is a child horse. So, oh, yeah. So, you know,
thanks
this is...
for pointing that out, because now...
All right, so there's more disturbing fan stuff out there. There's one guy who's written a whole series of erotica featuring the ponies, where all the ponies are also food. So, you know, and he's made up his own ponies. There's like an onion ring one.
Silent Green is ponies!
There's apparently an onion ring pony. And he
what?
Yeah, and he describes what, and you can tell it's supposed to be erotic manner, the consumption of the onion ring pony in some sensual way. I think there might be a hot dog one as well, which asks a lot of questions.
No, it actually answers a few. Okay.
The hot dog pony goes into the onion ring pony?
I'm no, I sure. I don't know. Okay. I mean, this is well outside of my
ketchup,
sphere
mustard,
of knowledge
relish.
And conjecture. I don't know. I'm not into it. It's not my thing, so I don't get it.
Is this worldwide or is this an American thing?
You know, that's actually an excellent question. I do not have the answer to.
You're not aware of it being a Japan thing?
They turn their head and they're just like, dudes, really?
They've got their own stuff going on over there. Yeah.
Bitch, please.
Yeah. Tuesday. No, but...
Back on your high horse.
Back on my horse. Sorry about
your high pony.
Yeah.
Whoa!
I see where you went.
Glee,
there.
Get it?
Yeah, we may want to stay away from those constructs.
Stay gold, pony boy.
Yeah, so on Tumblr, everyone here, I assume, is familiar with Tumblr, correct?
Yeah.
It's a blogging site, mostly picture-focused, whatnot. There's there apparently was a Tumblr called something like Princess Molestia or something like that.
Oh!
Yeah.
Don't even try to hide it anymore.
Yeah, and that... I fortunately found out about this after the Tumblr was taken down. But based on some feedback and comments, I got a very clear picture of the content or context of this blog. It apparently depicted stories of a main character, I'm guessing Celestia maybe was the name of the character, from the show, who performed certain rapey actions to other characters. Yeah. And there might have been some snuff in there, I think, as well.
Oh, good. Yeah. Okay, wonderful.
I'm not 100% clear on that one, but the context kind of implied that.
It's kind of rapey and a little snuffy, too.
Yeah. And so Tumblr's like, whoa, guys, this is really in violation of our terms of service, which one would hope.
It's not just a little bit in violation.
And I'm one of those guys.
You know, we could have turned the other cheek, kind of looked away from that if it was just a little bit, but
Yeah, you know, I'm all for freedom of speech. I really am. But you got to have a line, right? But anyway, that's not either here nor there. So,
well, no, I mean, freedom of speech, that guy, you know, somebody wants to write something like that, wants to be bold, that's fine. But that doesn't mean you can post it anywhere.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you can put it on a site where they have terms of service and they have, you know, standards and practices that you must follow. That's not freedom of speech. That has nothing to do with freedom of speech. That's their personal rights as the owner of that site.
Yeah, that's a good point. That is my new position. It follows what my soul tells me is not unholy, so I will go with that position.
Can we find something fun to just wrap this thing up with? Because
we don't want to end on
yikes.
This.
Yeah, I'm really bringing a downer here. Maybe
it's a glimpse into the how things can get.
So,
a
was
little...
there anything positive you can say about the bronyism?
Oh, you know, you think about that. You know, you hear a lot of people get down on furries, and I guess this is a bizarre subsect of furries in some ways. And I'm sure people will tell, you know, furry experts will correct me on why I'm wrong with that. But you know, you got to give the furries credit. Like here in Atlanta, they've had an annual bowling tournament with furries versus Klingons for charity.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. And so, you know, these people take their fetish and turn it into something positive and constructive. And you got to give them credit there. With the bronies, when you have, you know, the My Little Pony movie that came out last year, and you have these, again, adults in costume showing up to the theater, and these children...
That must have been where I heard about it.
Okay. Yeah, and these children are like, Mom, why is this guy who looks like Dad dressed up like a pony? And the mom had no idea bronies existed. What is she going to say to her daughter? She's not prepared for this conversation. So, that's a typical. So, furries apparently like charity, so that's the bright news.
Okay.
The good news.
And let's
so
all...
the, wait a minute. The group of which bronies are a far offshoot of.
Little tiny subs.
The tiny subculture. That group, the main group, likes charity. And that's the positive thing we can say about bronies.
Let's be thankful. Let's put it this way. Let's be thankful that for every really kind of out there, mildly disturbing to really disturbing subcategory, subculture, sub-niche of the nerd community, for every little one like that, there's a whole bunch of people that are nerds and into their thing and are doing good stuff with it.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I have to say...
And that happens outside of nerd culture, too. There's, you know... There's only so many serial killers, and there's a lot of great people that do a lot of wonderful things, and you just got to kind of keep that in mind when you move through the world.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I've talked to some of these bronies in my investigation of all this, and some of them really do seem like outstanding guys.
Obviously, they're not all hobby. Rapey and snuffy.
One would hope, yes.
Well, there you go.
Next time.
There's a documentary, by the way, called Bronies.
Yeah.
It's on the Netflix right now.
I really don't know. I should see that. I shouldn't see that.
I think you probably know enough.
I've seen
enough. You don't need to watch.
I think we probably know enough now that we don't need to watch that.
Yeah.
Now, in the next episode of Nerd Burger, Craig will not be asking Dave to come back.
You saying you want to do the outro?
You know, as I recall, you were not too impressed with my last outro. I did not appreciate my prize correctly, so I think I owe it to you to give you a better outro this time.
But first, thank you for coming on the show.
Happy to.
Twice in a row.
Yes, thank you.
That's a rhyming couplet. Da da da.
Okay.
I was waiting for an applause or something, but I didn't get it. Yeah.
Woo.
Mike, where can they find us?
NerdBurgerShow.com, at NerdBurgerShow on the Twitters and the Facebook, and email us NerdBurgerShow@gmail.com.
Next time on NerdBurger, Craig asked Dave not to come back. I didn't say it'd be an original outro.
Oh, wait, great. That's true, I'm not gonna.
So,
but still, Dave will come back.
To then be asked not to come back.
Absolutely.
Excellent.
Wait, who's coming back?
What?
Bye.
Bye.
I know a lot more about bronies than I wanted to. I just realized that.
Yeah, so do I now. Thanks a lot.